The message in the film is as valid today as the reason the incidents came into being 30 years ago.
With the strike now entering its fourth month and in the face of unprecedented violence, the government today insisted it will close 20 pits with the loss of over 20,000 jobs.
Mining communities are being bullied just like we are. What they need is cash.
Yeah, because the miners have always come to our aid, haven't they?
It doesn't matter. It's the right thing to do.
Ultimately, we're all human beings and we have hopes and aspirations that all of us wish to aspire to.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Marriage equality advances in the U.S. but stalls in Australia. Drag queens fight Facebook's names game. And an untold UK union story comes to the screen with Pride. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending October 4th, 2014. Australian equality activists endured another disappointment this week after a Freedom to Marry bill to open the civil institution to lesbian and gay couples was stalled just days before it was scheduled to be introduced and debated. Its sponsor, newly appointed Liberal Democrat Senator David Lionhelm, said the timing wasn't right, that he's still committed to introducing the legislation in a matter of weeks or months, but that he'd been counseled by major party MPs to first gather more bipartisan support. Rodney Croom of Australian Marriage Equality encouraged supporters of reform to use the delay to phone their local MPs and senators to urge an affirmative vote for the Freedom to Marry bill when it does come up. Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott has been a steadfast opponent of marriage equality, despite having an out lesbian sister and overwhelming public support for it. Some of his own party's MPs have called for a free vote on the issue. In 2012, the last time a marriage equality proposal was considered, it was defeated in Australia's House of Representatives by a more than 2-to-1 margin, and in the Senate by a vote of 41-26.
As we record this newscast, the United States Supreme Court has not announced a decision to hear one or more marriage equality cases in its next term. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg recently predicted that a ruling by the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on the issue that diverges from rulings to date in support of marriage equality in other federal appeals courts would hasten the High Court to hear one or more marriage cases. The Sixth Circuit ruling is due in a matter of weeks. If the string of marriage equality victories continues, however, the justices might choose to let more cases pile up, perhaps waiting to see if a contrary federal appeals court decision is issued.
In the latest lower court decision, Jackson County Circuit Judge J. Dale Youngs ruled on October 3rd that the state of Missouri must recognize the civil marriages of same-gender couples who lawfully married elsewhere. 10 gay and lesbian couples sued Missouri to have their out-of-state marriages recognized as valid. Youngs said that denying such recognition served no legitimate government interest. His decision will almost certainly be appealed. There are two other active cases challenging Missouri's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples. One is a federal challenge in Kansas City, and the other is a St. Louis case in which city officials granted marriage licenses to four same-gender couples to test the ban's legality.
In other news, more than 1,000 Serbian LGBT rights activists and their supporters held the first peaceful pride parade in 4 years in Belgrade on September 28th, marching through the capital city's streets, emptied of traffic and pedestrians by a massive security operation. A similar march in 2010 ended in a violent anti-gay riot by nationalists and religious fundamentalists. Three marches since then were banned after renewed threats from right-wing opponents. This year's march faced the same threats, but organizers persisted, and protection was offered by thousands of police officers in riot gear. Parade participants carried rainbow-colored balloons and flags and banners proclaiming pride, peace, and love as they marched from the government headquarters through the empty Belgrade streets. The head of Serbia's influential Christian Orthodox Church had strongly denounced the parade, and anti-gay graffiti appeared around the city in the days leading up to the event that read, "Stop the parade of shame, and they will not march." Several hundred people gathered in Belgrade the day before to protest the march. That also drew a heavy police presence. Because Serbia is a candidate for European Union membership, the government has been under a human rights microscope. Sources said that officials wanted to show that they can protect human rights and that hate crimes prevention is a top government priority.
Elsewhere, in an October 3rd editorial in New Vision, the nation's leading daily newspaper, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni expressed concerns about the new version of the anti-homosexuality law now pending in the East African nation's parliament. The original version, which included a life sentence for repeated homosexuality, was overturned on a legal technicality earlier this year. Museveni said that he only signed off on that law in February because he wanted to protect children and prevent people from being recruited into homosexuality. But Museveni, who last month had trouble finding a hotel room in Texas to promote Ugandan trade and tourism because of protests by LGBT rights activists, said that his people need to consider national interests. It is about deciding what is best for our country in the realm of foreign trade, which is such an important stimulus for growth and transformation that it has no equal. We want to protect our children from homosexuality, he wrote, but we do not want to kill our trade opportunities. That now forces us to disassemble this whole issue. Museveni said that he'd been in touch with MP David Bahati, the key architect of the anti-homosexuality law, and told him to meet with delegations of business people to see how to resolve this issue.
Meanwhile, the Indonesian province of Aceh now punishes same-gender sex with public caning. Aceh is the only part of the predominantly Muslim nation that enforces Islamic law, or Sharia. Through an arrangement it has with the federal government, the province has autonomous control over crime and punishment. The new bylaw was approved last week and criminalizes same-gender sex for both men and women, and for both Muslims and non-Muslims. It punishes convictions with 100 months in jail, 100 lashes, or a fine equivalent to 1,000 grams of gold. Indonesia has the world's largest Muslim population, but outside of Aceh, most practice a more moderate form of the faith. Homosexuality is also legal in the rest of the country, although the age of consent for same-gender sex is higher than for heterosex. Nevertheless, Indonesia was one of the nations voting in the minority against a landmark UN Human Rights Council resolution last month that condemned violence and discrimination against LGBT people. According to Amnesty International, at least 156 people have been caned in Aceh since 2010 for various unrelated offenses, including gambling, drinking alcohol, or selling food during Ramadan. In urging Aceh officials to repeal the homophobic bylaw, the group pointed out that caning violates international law and called the new anti-gay statute an enormous step backwards for human rights.
But measures to protect LGBT people passed this week in both the biggest city of the Philippines and in Spain's Catalonia region. The Quezon City Council unanimously approved an ordinance banning discrimination against LGBT people after a marathon 8-hour hearing. It expands on a 2003 resolution banning LGBT employment bias to now also cover education, delivery of goods or services, insurance, and accommodations. It also affirmatively provides venues to teach employers and educators about the rights of sexual minorities. One local official called LGBT people a strong and important force in our city's progress and development.
Passage of a measure to penalize anti-LGBT hate crimes was more acrimonious in Spain's autonomous Catalonia region, though it was the first such measure to pass in the country. According to the news website The Local, the proposal was backed by left-wing groups but was opposed by conservatives and Catalan nationalists. It punishes attacks based on sexual orientation or gender identity with heavy fines that one of its supporters said are meant to act as deterrent. With its marriage equality law now almost a decade old, Spain is known as one of the more LGBT-friendly countries in Europe. But according to a mid-2014 report, sexual minorities are on track to be the most frequent victims of hate crime in Spain this year, matching or exceeding last year's high of 452 identified cases.
And finally, Facebook has learned the hard way not to mess with drag queens. The social media giant apologized this week for enacting a real names policy in mid-September to ostensibly fight fraud and improve security that banned drag performers from using stage names on their profiles. Many of them had their profiles deleted immediately following the announcement of the new policy. Some activists then called on LGBT people to abandon Facebook for Elo a new and seemingly more accepting social media platform. A group of drag queens, activists, and openly gay San Francisco supervisor Rudy Campos met twice with Facebook officials before changes in enforcement of the policy were announced. Mark Snyder of the Transgender Law Center called the second meeting in particular very productive and said that Facebook officials apologized for the way the situation has been handled. The policy also threatened other Facebook users, including battered women, bullied teens, and people in countries that severely punish LGBT people who would fear for their lives if forced to use real names in their profiles. Snyder said that company officials promised to change how the policy is enforced, to also ensure that folks who need to use chosen names that reflect their authentic selves online are able to do so.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 4th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Marie Gilkison.
And I'm Rick Watts.
The U.S. Supreme Court on October 6th rejected all seven cases before it involving marriage equality, which immediately allows lesbian and gay couples in Indiana, Oklahoma, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Utah to tie the knot. It also opens the institution to same-gender couples in the other states in those federal appeals court circuits, the 10th, 7th, and 4th, that had similar bans on civil marriage equality: Colorado, Kansas, North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, and Wyoming. As Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg predicted last month, the High Court appears to be waiting for an appeals court ruling that upholds a state's civil marriage ban. Some believe that a decision by the Sixth Circuit, due in the next few weeks, might be the one. A ruling is also expected soon from the Ninth Circuit. There are other marriage equality cases being considered by the Fifth and Eleventh Circuits. Stay tuned.
And I'm Maria,
and together we're Zrazy.
And we're crazy about This Way Out.
With the strike now entering its fourth month and in the face of unprecedented violence, the government today insisted it will close 20 pits with the loss of over 20,000 jobs.
Mining communities are being bullied just like we are. What they need is cash.
Yeah, because the miners have always come to our aid, haven't
they? It doesn't matter. It's the right thing to do.
So we are going to pick a mining town completely at random.
Wales.
Die! Your gays have arrived!
Movies about the labor movement have never been plentiful, and the few there are have certainly not depicted the long history of the alliance between LGBT and union activists. But a new film is changing that, telling the true story of Welsh coal mine strikers and their queer London supporters. Bristol correspondent Mary Milton has a personal connection with one of the people portrayed in the film and chats with him about his experience in real life and on the screen.
Welcome, come on in, everybody. Great to see you again.
Thank you very much for having us.
Now, I'm hoping you can clear something up for me about lesbians.
Not now, Gwen.
It's something I was told in the covered market, and to be honest with you, it did surprise me.
Let me get settled in for a show.
That's from Pride, a new film set during the miners' strike of the 1980s. Die is based on a real person, David Donovan, and he also happens now to be my union official.
This is a bit weird for me because I actually feel like, as I know you a bit already and I count you as a friend.
Yeah.
I knew you had a kind of previous life as a miner, and suddenly I'm seeing a bit of your life up on the screen.
Well, I think you say it's weird for you. It's the same for me, frankly, because to think that somebody would contact you and discuss, you know, incidents from your past 30 years ago or then now were merited, if you like, portrayal on a screen, and to go further than that, to actually retain your identity on the screen. I mean, it is really unusual. I think When you look back on those events, it's easy enough, I think, to think of them as almost history now. But I think the message in the film is as valid today as the reason the incidents came into being 30 years ago.
What was going on for you and your community at that time? Where were you?
Well, we were talking about the miners' strike in 82 and 85. The industrial landscape of South Wales in particular was very bleak. I think it's all too easy to forget the attack on society that was going on at that time by Thatcher and the Conservative government. It was a deconstruction of major trades unions up and down the country. It was an attack on individuals, whether you were identified as a trades unionist or whether you were identified by the colour of your skin or indeed your sexuality. I think it's all too easy to forget how terrible those times were when we look at society today.
So there you are, you're part of a relatively small mining community in South Wales, and lesbians and gays support the miners suddenly sort of crashed into your life. How did that happen?
Quite simply, really, that I was asked to pick up a cheque that came from lesbians and gays in London, and would I go and pick the cheque up? And I unhesitatingly said, yes, of course I will, because I believe that for me the strike was political. It always was, and it was about a much wider defence than the defence of an immediate colliery or community in the coalfields.
I have to say, one of the extraordinary scenes is you meeting the group in London and you're portrayed as saying, I don't think I've met any gay people before. Is that a slight embroidering of the truth?
Yes, it is, really. But, I mean, the producers were always very, very careful to say that, look, this isn't a documentary, almost to reassure us that it wouldn't be a documentary, that there was some dramatic licence to be taken. And I think that's fair enough.
There's also a scene where you're seen giving a speech in a gay club.
I'm going to invite somebody onto the stage now who wants to talk to you, and I want you to listen to him. He comes from the Delice Valley in South Wales, and he's a striking miner, and he has something he wants to say to you.
I've had a lot of new experiences during the strike. Speaking in public, standing on a picket line, and now I'm in a gay bar.
Well, if you don't like it, you can go home.
As a matter of fact, I do like it. Beer's a bit expensive, mine. But really, there's only one difference between this and a bar in South Wales. The women, they're a lot more feminine than you. What I'd really like to say to you tonight is thank you. If you're one of the people that's put money in these buckets, if you've supported LGSM, then thank you. Because what you've given us is more than money, it's friendship. When you're in a battle against an enemy so much bigger, so much stronger than you, but to find out you had a friend you never knew existed,
well, that's the best feeling in the world.
So thank you.
Please tell me that that's true. Please tell me that happened.
Most of what you see is accurate, yeah.
You're grinning. Did you enjoy that?
Yes, it was. It was so far removed from my everyday experience. So far removed. I think it's fair to say that the clubs that I went to, that I was taken to by lesbians and gays, were a real eye-opener. And yet, you know, the experience itself was just a reaffirmation that we are all the same people, basically. I gave that speech in the gay club. I think the first time I went there to pick up a cheque, it was in one of the nightclubs in London, and then subsequently at Gays the Word bookshop and attending meetings there, and then at the Pits and Perverts concert. And yes, all of that is accurate.
It felt like you went on a bit of a limb, because you then invited them back to your home.
Yeah. Well, I didn't actually invite them to my home. I invited them down to the community that we were. That is the Neath, Swansea and Delice Valley support group. We would bring support groups down to the mining communities so that they could see exactly what and who they were supporting. The difficulty was that they were late arriving, and so therefore they couldn't find the hall that we'd arranged all the families, the number of the families going to take people back to their homes. So they ended up in my home, and they all spent, I think it was over 40 people spent the night on the
40.
Living room. Over 40 spent the night lying in all sorts of cul-de-sacs in my home, and my wife and my two children were there, and it was quite an experience. And I'll always remember my daughter coming down the stairs. She was about 7 or 8 at the time, coming down the stairs, just looking with all these. You literally couldn't put your feet onto a clear space of floor to walk across. And it's one of those memories that sort of enrich one's memories and experiences at that time. It's enriched it for me, certainly my family, but it's enriched it for my daughter and my son at the time as well, who have these fleeting memories, albeit too young at that stage to know exactly what they were, you know.
Did that feel like a bit of a risk, inviting gays and lesbians from London to come to what might have been a slightly more conservative, with a small C, Welsh village? Yeah.
In my mind, there was never any doubt at all, nor was there any doubt in the mind of the support group when we discussed it. But the strange thing was, as the date was coming nearer to that weekend, I did wonder. I wondered whether people were as generous as I imagined they were, because it's all too easy if you're a little bit chopsy, a little bit loud-mouthed, to be, you know, driving things through. The amazing thing about the experience was that the families in the communities of South Wales were every bit as generous as I imagined. We didn't even have to consider it twice. They showed an openness and a generosity that I'm extremely proud of. I'm proud of that fact too today.
What else did they bring the community other than the cash?
The importance of it was that individuals in that community took lesbian and gay people into their homes, whereas they couldn't identify other people that worked in the colonies or worked in the factories that were lesbian and gay. And so that therefore that generosity was very important in being able to show everybody that ultimately we're all human beings and we have hopes and aspirations that all of us would wish to aspire to. And I think the opportunity it gave us was to say that we know, some of us experienced this for the first time, that is the concerted attack of the state, whereas you have been experiencing this from when, if you would read The Sun or the Mail or The Express. And the opportunity it gave us was to forge that link with them. And some people may remember that the miners were called the enemy within. But of course, other sections of society had been considered to be the enemy within. And it was our opportunity to say, you worn our badge, now we'll wear yours. And I think that intermingling, if you like, of ideas, that mixing, if you like, of identity is something that was extremely valuable and made it sustainable for the last 30 years.
Why should gay people like me support the miners?
Because miners dig for coal, which produces power, which allows gay people like you to dance to Bananarama until 3 o'clock in the morning. Next question. Venus was the name.
Let me move on to the kind of the experience of your life is in a film. What does that do to you when you watch it?
Well, it is unusual. I mean, I think I spent the first few minutes like, I don't know what it would be typical, but I was looking for the character that was playing me, and I found myself thinking, oh, well, I didn't wear my hair like that, or I didn't dress like that. And then, but that only lasted a few minutes because, in fairness, I think Paddy Considine, who acts as me, I met him for about an hour. He certainly took on my spirit and he took on my character, if you like, and one of my children said as much. And to see that portrayed, it came through to me as well, that maybe he wasn't as decisive as I would like to think I was. Maybe he wasn't, but what he captured of me was, if you like, that sincerity about the desire to see people under attack, to work together, to support each other.
I don't want to ruin the film, but it's got the most amazing ending. There were several times during the movie where I was in tears from just remembering what the 80s were like. It was so real, and also it felt close to me because I know you. But the ending of that movie, when what happens, happens, what did that feel like in real life?
I found myself, the same as you, feeling the same about some of the memories being portrayed there. Frankly, it felt like a justification. It felt like a confirmation of that a desire for two communities to hold hands and to help each other. It was about the desire and that no people should feel alone, and that when you make those links are sustained, and that simply because the pressure had gone off the miners, because unfortunately we lost that big battle, it didn't mean to say that those links that were forged in adversity would fall as well.
Has it changed you, and did it change the community? Are those things still there?
They definitely still there, because many of the individuals that were involved on both sides, some regrettably have died since the events portrayed, and some of the key players that are portrayed in the film have died sadly, but the friendships that were forged then are still there. The memories of what was forged then are still there. And I would argue that what was built within the lesbian and gay community, that is, that it would take its place amongst mainstream political dialogue in the United Kingdom, is definitely there. Anybody that fails to be convinced of that only has to look at the timeline of politics for lesbian and gay community in the early 80s and see where it is today. It is part of mainstream society, part of mainstream politics today.
Thank you, David.
Who hates the minors? Thatcher? Who else? The police, the public and the tabloid press. It sounds familiar.
I'm home. I'm gay. I'm Welsh.
That's right!
Welsh union organiser David Di Donovan was interviewed by Mary Milton about the new movie Pride. The film was open to rave reviews in the UK and the US. But charges of knee-jerk homophobia have erupted around the R rating given to the film by America's Motion Picture Association of America, thereby banning anyone under the age of 17 from seeing it.
Solidarity forever! Solidarity forever! Solidarity forever! For the union makes us strong!
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michelle Marie Gilkison, Rick Watts, and Mary Milton contributed program material, with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Pete Seeger performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentham, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WHAV Haverhill, Massachusetts, KZSC Santa Cruz, California, CHSR Fredericton, New Brunswick, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.